It's alive!
Time now for...
I want to play a game.
Overreaction Monday!
You know, it's Halloween. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare, huh?
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, time to overreact, folks, college football fans of America. And there was plenty to overreact to. The Big Ten is back. May this league avoid COVID completely, because the entertainment value we got on Saturday. And I will start with this. Indiana, our Indiana. Indiana, we're all for you. We will fight for the cream and crimson, for the glory of old IU.
Wow. The way you read never, that even. My goodness. Yeah,
never daunted. Chills. We cannot falter. In battle, we're tried and true. Indiana, our Indiana. Indiana, we're all for you. IU.
I got chill bumps.
It's a wonder they suck so much.
with an inspiring song like that. How could
pretty
that?
Good lyrics. Pretty good lyrics.
Not bad. There's worse. There's a lot worse out there. So
Indiana, first win over a top 10 team since 1987.
Wow.
Yes.
Not bad. Coach yes. Tom Allen crowd surfing after the team tells them they love him.
Yeah. Great video from the locker room.
Phenomenal game. Phenomenally entertaining game if you weren't a Penn State fan having your guts ripped out. Indiana blows this game every freaking time. And when I can't remember the name of the tight end who dropped the pass over the middle, we'll just not name him because it doesn't matter.
But he's a good player, except for that play.
They had the game won. He drops him like Indiana's losing. Seen this movie? The bad guys are going to escape. Now, they come back and win in overtime. But this game was defined by Penn State mistakes. This is a gut punch loss for Penn State. They have Ohio State coming next week. They have game day coming next week. This was supposed to be the top 10 matchup. Everybody excited. Chance to beat the Buckeyes, who they've been competitive with. Beat them. And all of a sudden, national playoffs are right there. And they go out and blow this game. Terrible first half. And then late, when they had it won, epic failures in game management. James Franklin and his staff. Quick recap. 1:42 left in the fourth. Indiana lets Devin Ford run in to the end zone for a touchdown. He should have just kneeled down at the 2-yard line, fallen down, and run the clock out. They win the game. Said he scores. Makes it 27-20. And gives Indiana's going to get the ball back with a chance to tie. Then Franklin could go for two and put the game away. One play. They convert on two. It's a 9-point game. There's no shot for Indiana. Instead, he kicks the extra point. Makes it still a one-possession game. Indiana goes right down the field and scores. Converts the 2-point conversion. Makes it 28-28. Then they botch a squib kick that goes 16 yards, puts Penn State in business. This one's maybe a little complicated. I don't know what you guys think, but with 8 seconds left, Penn State is sitting second and one at the 40. They have no timeouts, but if you just run a QB sneak and get the first down, get 3, 4, 5 yards, even 1 yard, clock stops, spike it. Maybe this is impossible in college. Maybe it's impossible when you don't have as much practice time, but I don't know what they've been doing all season. I mean, the practice has been going on. Instead, he just tries the 57-yarder. It falls a yard short. And then we get to overtime, and there is just the epic play by Michael Penix Jr., quarterback for Indiana, with the stretch to get the ball to the pylon to win the game. Did it make it? Did it not? I thought he was short, but it was so close. It is what it is. Incredible, incredible play. Pete, I saw you write about, obviously, the failures of Penn State. Let's focus on that before we get to Indiana. Thoughts?
I mean, people listening to this podcast know we're going to focus on the negative aspect before the positive. So this is what they this is what they came for. So it was interesting going back to listen to James Franklin's comments after the game, because he didn't want to throw Devin Ford under the bus. But he also wanted to make clear that the instruction was given on the sideline to do what he failed to do. I crunched the numbers last night and sort of went down the rabbit hole of like clock management. So Indiana had one timeout. Penn State has the ball on the 14. So in theory, they couldn't just, so some people like they could have just taken three knees and won. They could not have, because that one timeout. If you have that situation and the play clock is running, you can go about 2 minutes and just make it disappear. But the timeout moves that into the 120s. And again, there's some nebulous, do you snap it at two, that kind of stuff there. So, but as soon as the tailback crossed that first down marker, that was the moment where the game was actually won. That was the moment where you have to do that. And I really think there has been other games where this has happened, but I really think the high profile nature of this game will make this the example. Like for years from now, they'll be like, don't be like Penn State that time and not take the win. Because what they did by not going down, and we've seen it plenty of times where guys have like returned an interception and then you're like, oh, the smart play there would have been to fall down at the one. Oh, the smart, you know. Now, Indiana, and give them a ton of credit, they had to do like 19 things to get it to the point, including just that immaculate stretch to the pylon by Penix. But I really think that whatever James Franklin did, whatever was articulated, whatever he told guys, it was not enough. Like, it clearly it was in the back of Taylor's mind, because he did like a little like shimmy stutter step dance. Like, it was almost like, this is too easy. Should I be doing it? Yes, and like gravity pushed him into the end zone. It was like the opposite of Daniel Jones. Instead of the gravity pushing him to the ground for no reason, gravity pushed him to the touchdown. But the fault here ultimately lies with James Franklin, because they have to know in no uncertain terms that they cannot score. And give Tom Allen credit. It is against like generations of coaching DNA to let the other team score, especially for a defensive coach. That's an easy thing to sit around the staff room in May and bring in the analytics guy and decide to do. It's a much more difficult thing standing on the sideline when you had Penn State on the ropes all day and, you know, could have one of the biggest wins in school history to say, yeah, let's let them score. So ton of credit to Tom Allen for making one of the season's best coaching decisions. And a lot of James Franklin, and I know Pat can talk about this too, like James Franklin has never been a great game manager. He's never been a good timeout guy. He's never been a good clock guy. He just hasn't. He wasn't at Vanderbilt. He hasn't been, especially in the early years at Penn State. And, you know, is it the point where they need a designated guy? They need a retired, and they need someone to be helping him with that. Because that just, look, you're paid $7-8 million a year for these 12 Saturdays. And James Franklin does a lot of things really, really well. He's one of the best coaches in college football. But this failure magnifies his past failures.
And that's where we are in college football, though, where he's getting $5.65 million, but you got to pay somebody else to take care of that fundamental thing for him. Whatever. this was, you know, come on. Yeah, you can fit that under the umbrella of $5.65 million job responsibilities, in my opinion. No time, no score. But no, this, I mean, it was astounding watching it when he broke into the clear on the play. Pete, as you said, it does go against the coaching grain to tell your team, just get out of the way and let them score. But that was the only play. That was the best play to make at that point. And even though they could not have run out the clock, if you take three knees and kick a field goal, you're going to give them 20 seconds to then have to score a touchdown. So even if you don't run it all the way out, I would have been in favor of just doing that, taking three knees, centering the ball. And the ironic thing is Tom Allen had his own horrible clock management meltdown at the end of the first half when there's, I believe, 8 seconds left and they run a play on their own like 10 instead of taking a knee, and Stevie Scott fumbles and Penn State recovers And they originally say the clock's run out, but then they put 2 seconds on it, and Penn State has a chance to kick a field goal, and they doink it off the upright. There was so much stuff that happened in this game. It's incredible. Dan, to your point about Indiana, look, in 1987, the last time they beat a top 10 team, I was just out of college, and I was working at the Courier-Journal in Louisville, and we covered Indiana football. I had somebody lived in Bloomington, covered football and basketball, and they had Anthony Thompson on that team, and they were very good. And I get there like, oh, Indiana's pretty good. Who knew 33 years later, we'd finally be seeing them win another big game? Because
I was hoping you were at the game, Pat. That would have made me happy.
No. But the litany of games like this that they have lost and the ways that they have lost it is just endless. And so for them to end up on the other side of it, hey, good for Indiana.
Yeah, this one really hurts for Penn State, and I'll get right to Indiana because it is a great win for them. James Franklin, I think I saw someone mention this, and it made sense to me. He's clearly one of the best coaches in the country. I mean, what he did at Vanderbilt and what he's done at Penn State, especially considering the state of the program he took over in 14. But, you know, time kind of changes that. But this is a program that should be in the contention for the playoffs. I mean, there's nothing Penn State needs more that it should contend, and it has not yet contended. They got to a Rose Bowl in 16, basically because I think Ohio State made the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. And other than that, you know, it hasn't happened. They lose a game or two. He's a reminder of Jim Caldwell, who was once a Penn State assistant a gazillion years ago. In the NFL, Jim Caldwell had the Colts when they had Peyton Manning, and then he had the Lions. And if you remember, famously, I think it was a playoff game, he called the timeout at the wrong time. The last minute of critical games, there was in Detroit, there was a Hail Mary where they just didn't even cover a guy against the Packers. I mean, he would blow games. And it was like from the post-game locker room for an entire week up to the last 5 minutes of the next week's game, phenomenal coach.
Yeah.
And then there's the 5 minutes. Like, everything else is phenomenal. And then you go, what the hell? And so you can't have cost you your chance. Because, look, Penn State's got a loss to Indiana now. I don't think they can make a playoff. Maybe they can. Maybe if they house Ohio State next week and roll on. But you just put yourself – you had a game to win, and you gave it up to an inferior team. And that is just – really tough. And I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. This is the seventh year at Penn State. Done a great job, but they've yet to have a top five finish in the rankings. They've yet to make the playoff. Obviously, you got this beast over in Columbus you got to deal with, but it's not like they're finishing with one loss. They have not had a single, they went 7-6, 7-6, 11-3, 11-2, 9-4, not 11-2. And now they're 0-1. So, painful loss for Penn State. Indiana, Tom Allen, awesome. He has built this thing up. 5-7, 5-7, 8-5, and then this. And they were chirping a little this offseason, talking about how good they could be. Penix Jr. said they were going to shock the world, promised it in the local paper, the Indianapolis Star. Well, here we are, shocked. Penix Jr., that play, just incredible. I think Pete mentioned that picture will be hanging on sports bars right? Incredible. Interesting story. And Sully, this is a little for you. 4-star recruit from Tampa. He was headed to Tennessee.
He cried when we cut him loose.
Yeah.
And then he slinked his way to Indiana, and now he's going to be in sports bars for decades.
Yeah. He was committed to Tennessee. Jeremy Pruitt got hired. Scholarship got pulled.
We can go back to Chris Sims, Ken Dorsey. We can go back to a million of them. Trevor Lawrence. We could do it all. There's a giant list of it.
Oh, we're going to get to it.
Wait, Trevor Lawrence is going to go to Tennessee?
Tennessee doesn't recruit Trevor Lawrence? What?
Trevor Lawrence grew up, was wearing number 16 because he was a Peyton Manning fan. He was a Tennessee fan growing up. I'm not saying he was going there. Butch Jones is an idiot. Put a competent clown in Knoxville, and you have Amari Rodgers, T. Higgins, and Trevor Lawrence.
A bit of a stretch now.
We're getting message board Sully today. This isn't our Sully.
That's not message board. That's not a stretch.
I mean, you can't just say you were going to get Trevor Lawrence.
You were not going to get Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. The one they actually screwed up was Justin Fields.
Yeah, Justin Fields too. Yeah, yeah.
He went and visited there and like nobody paid attention to him.
Well, they screwed Michael Penix Jr. up because he was committed to Tennessee and they pulled his scholarship to take JT Shrout.
Yeah, I think their quarterback position's in great hands at Tennessee. Why would they need anybody else? I
mean, that room's loaded.
Yeah. I'm not saying Penix Jr. is Trevor Lawrence, but I think Tennessee could use him. So I don't know. Pete, your thoughts on that moment and that incredible replay?
Yeah, I mean, it probably took 5 minutes, 6 minutes for the officials to figure out. It felt like it took like a month, right? Like it was like one of those moments where just so much was hanging in the air. So much was hanging in the balance. It was just this like the stakes, the pain, the potential for, you know, it was either going to be an all-time generational moment for Indiana or like an all-time flop for Franklin Penn State. And it was just all there. And look, rational people can see that picture totally different. It's just like an amazing, it's just an amazing thing. You can see, no, his wrist isn't on the line. No, it isn't. You know, I'm inconclusive still. I do not have a strong opinion either way. I'm glad they didn't overturn it. I didn't feel like there was enough there to do that. But I mean, the announcers felt that way. I felt like Twitter felt that way. Like certainly Penn State fans thought he was out. And yeah, it was like, what a way to capture the madness. It's just one of those moments. And credit the photographer. I think it was from the State College paper. I retweeted last night. That picture, I'm not a photography expert, but I don't believe you could ever have gotten that picture in a non-COVID time because it looks like it was just taken in the stands. Like you would have been in the student section trying to get that snapshot during that. Yes. Like you don't see full stretched out because you would have to take that picture from like
way too close. You know,
yes, would have been and you couldn't on the get field. Like an appreciation in the perspective. So anyway, just a bizarre, you know, when we're looking at that picture 20 years from now, like it will be funny to say like, and the only reason that happened was because this happened in this awful, awful year where everything went sideways.
That needs to be on the wall of Nick's English Hut, that great bar they got down in.
Yes.
Bloomington, it'll be there. It'll be on Kilroy's. It'll be in all the spots in Bloomington.
I believe Nick's English Hut has like 7 gazillion things on the wall anyway. I remember feeling like overwhelmed. So if that thing isn't front and center, one of the great moments for them.
The picture I'm putting it next to in Indiana lore is Christian Watford hitting the shot to beat Kentucky in 2012, because that picture's all over Bloomington. That's the one that's their iconic basketball picture, and this one now goes next to it. When Penix tucked it, I didn't think he had an angle to get there. I thought, oh, he's just, you know, this isn't even going to be close. He's going to get knocked out of bounds. And then for him, he makes that leap and it's just like, oh my gosh. Full extension of every part of his body to even get it close. In real time, I thought, oh, I think he got there. And then on replay, I thought, oh, no, I think his hand's out of bounds. And like every time I watched it, my mind basically changed back and forth. And that's where I came to the same as Pete, the realization, like, it's just too close. You gotta let it stand. But I mean, whew, you just can't get a play that's any closer than that. Really. It is an inch here or an inch there between win or lose. And that was, you know, for Tom Allen to make that call there, another, whew, that was a gamble. It was literally, we are going to win or lose right here on this play. And up to that point, I kind of thought they were good enough to just keep playing toe-to-toe with Penn State. But you think back, their offense, other than the drive for the 8 points, their offense really hadn't been very good for quite a while in that game. So that, I guess, in retrospect, it was certainly the right decision. But Tom Allen was the head coach at Ben Davis High School in Indianapolis in 2006. And then he just started getting college assistant jobs. And this is not some guy that was ever, to my knowledge, on anybody's hot coordinator list or
not mine.
Came from some, you know, fancy coaching tree. You know, he didn't coach for Nick Saban. He didn't coach for Urban Meyer, anybody like that. No, he was just a guy who kind of worked around, and then he got on Kevin Wilson's staff. Remember, Pete, where Dan, we had Kevin Wilson on our old podcast.
Oh, yeah. Love him.
Yeah, it's crazy. He was feisty. But he gets in some trouble there for player relations, I guess, and gets bounced out, and they promote Allen. Everybody's like, This is terrible. What a bad decision. He's nobody. He's not going to do anything. And now here we're sitting here. They've gone 8-5 last year. They beat Penn State. Tom Allen looks like a hell of a hire.
Went to Maranatha Baptist University. I've been covering college sports for 25 years. That's the first time I've ever heard of that school. Have you heard of that one?
I've heard of it, but I don't know where it is. I don't know where it is.
It's in Watertown, Wisconsin. Okay. Temple Heights High School in Florida. He was defensive coordinator at Armwood High School in Florida. Then he was
Armwood's a real school. They've got dudes.
Yeah. Marion in Indiana. Then Ben Davis. Finally became the head coach at Ben Davis. Then at Wabash, Lambeth, Drake, Arkansas State. Got his big break as a linebacker coach at Ole Miss. Then he was defensive coordinator at South Florida, then the DC at Indiana, and here he is. So, yeah, he has built his way up. Classic victory. I thought I saw the bottom of that ball move when it hit. My only question is, when you touch the pylon, does the pylon make the ball move? And it probably doesn't. So that was my one thing. Like, it could be grazing the pylon and not move. But it was so close. Again, I thought it was. But, man, if you're Penn State and you're relying on that,
yeah,
you've lost. But if you're the less talented team, you got to go for two. The more plays in a game, the more you're going to return to mean. And one of these guys on Penn State's going to pick a ball or something. So I thought it was a great call. All right, Sully is making his case that Tennessee should have had Trevor Lawrence. Quote okay. From Trevor Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
For what it is, this is some serious shade though. I got to say, I was a Tennessee fan. My mom's family is from Tennessee. So growing up, that's the only thing I really knew was Tennessee football. Watched them all the time. I think when I got to middle school or high school, kind of just started, just I guess when I got offers and stuff, I kind of quit being a fan. So he was a fan until he started getting offers and then realized this is a tire fire.
I'm getting offers to go to good programs. Okay.
I'm good.
But I mean, yes, if Tennessee was rolling along, if Dabo Sweeney coached the Tennessee Vols, he would have gotten Trevor Lawrence.
I would say the average coach.
I don't know, man. Trevor Lawrence knew
an equal bag compared to Clemson. So might as well, you know, if apples are apples, sure.
Then it wasn't apples and apples, though. An average coach at Tennessee. He walked into a program where he could compete for national championships from day mm-hmm. one and throw to NFL star receivers from day one.
Two of those NFL star receivers are from Knoxville that were also going to Tennessee.
Hey, if we're going to talk about Tennessee, can we go ahead and talk about Tennessee? Or
let's talk about Tennessee.
Let's talk about the tire fire.
Okay. Total train wreck. They get drilled 48-17. They've lost three in a row, all by three TDs or more. They get Arkansas next. I think it's a must-win game, simply put. Yeah. Cannot lose to Arkansas and make it four in a row. Lose to Alabama, it's one thing. Lose to Arkansas and Kentucky, it's another. Here's Jeremy Pruitt after the game. You know, looking at that game, I thought offensively it was probably one of our better games we've played. We did have one turnover, which was for a touchdown, which is inexcusable. But we started running the ball pretty well at times, pretty well. I thought we protected pretty well for the most part. Just didn't have the ball. 34 minutes for Alabama, 25 time possession. I was on the gap between him and Alabama. I was on the other side 3 years ago. You think I didn't see that? I can assure you the gap is closing. Might not show on the scoreboard today, but the gap is closing. I can assure you that.
Wait, did Sully do the post game or is that Pruitt?
No, I think Butch Jones did the post game.
Joe Rexroad of The Athletic in Nashville. Starts putting this. I'm like, that's a joke, right? That's not a real quote. I thought our offense played well.
That's a loser quote there. The scoreboard and what, you know, but we also heard this, by the way, we heard this from Tennessee after the Georgia game. Well, it was a lot closer than the score. The gap is definitely closing between us and Georgia. Then they turned around the week after that and lost by 27 to Kentucky. The most they'd lost to Kentucky since the Depression. And now you turn around and do this and you want to talk about, the offense is doing better. That's loser mentality. It's like you've got a 2-8 sort of program. You're trying to buck everybody up. Meanwhile, there was a game in East Lansing Greg Schiano, who was in his first game at Rutgers. How did that one go? Remember, Greg Schiano, not only is he just a terrible human being, according to Rocky Top, but he's not a good enough coach for Tennessee. Not good enough. Populist uprising had to block that hire. Greg Schiano's first college coaching game in a long time turned out how? Somebody remind me. Help me out here.
They beat the Sparties, who absolutely suck, but still, Rutgers looked pretty good.
Rutgers had lost 21 straight Big Ten games. They were hopeless.
Sam Pittman and Greg Schiano, immediate impacts.
Thank God Knoxville was saved from the scourge of Greg Schiano. My goodness.
It took one game to cash that take. One game against Michigan State to cash that take.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
do you want to brag about for Jeremy Pruitt, brother?
There's nothing to brag about. He sucks.
Okay. Did beat Indiana. Look, at Michigan State's horrible. Yeah. They and Maryland are going to be in that game is going to be the worst game of the year. Michigan State, Maryland. But Rutgers look good. Well coached. I will give them that.
They've got some hope on offense.
Rutgers was not playing Alabama yesterday.
No. Michigan State was terrible. They were horrible.
A little early on that, but good job for Coach Schiano. Anyway, Pete.
For Tennessee here, all of a sudden, like the Pruitt era, Sully hung up his first half SEC East Championship in the Georgia game. Like, if they don't win at Arkansas, and I would think they're going to be an underdog in that game, then they go A&M at home at Auburn. And all of a sudden now you are looking at a 6-game losing streak for the coach that you just extended. I don't know. Like, this is pretty much who I thought Tennessee was, right? Like, I don't think going into the season that I bought that they'd made this leap because they had just beaten the string of patsies to end last season. And I think they're about to hit that crossroads of, like, major change. All right, we're going to have to get rid of Jim Chaney, even though you paid him a boatload of money and he was a big score to get from Georgia when Kirby tried to unload him. Okay, do we need a new defensive coordinator? Well, that's Pruitt's specialty. Like, recruiting is allegedly going well, although that kind of they won the offseason on it, and that's probably the best thing that Pruitt has done. He's been able to manipulate the recruiting system to draw attention to Tennessee when they didn't deserve any. As for the Schiano versus Pruitt debate, like, the thing that's always made me laugh is that Schiano was an NFL coach, head coach for 2 years. He was kind of like a consultant with the Patriots. He worked there for like 2 months or whatever. And he was a head coach for 11 years, and he worked for Urban Meyer for 2 and Ryan Day for 1. So, like, when you talk about, like, actual who's a better coach, I mean, it's just not an argument. Like, Greg Schiano is 13 years, you know, going into this year, 13 years of head coaching experience. He knows how to flip a roster. He knows how to manage a program. Tennessee fans were just trying to mock him because of the record at Rutgers instead of looking through the prism of what he accomplished. But just on the pure notion of, if you've done this for 13 years, you've done it at a high level, anyone who's gone and coached in the NFL from college will tell you they learn football on just a completely different level. So that argument to me was never even an argument. It was just like an emotional spasm of Tennessee fans trying to defend what happened.
I think it's a little early for the comparison between the two, but we'll see. I do agree with the criticisms of Schiano too, when he was, you don't understand how bad Rutgers is and how Rutgers has nothing. And then B, yeah, he didn't work out in the NFL. You know who else didn't work out in the NFL? Nick Saban.
Steve Spurrier.
Right, Steve Spurrier. I mean, it's totally different ballgame. You know who has a losing record as we tape this thing right now? Bill Belichick. The pros are different. Greg Popovich got crushed last year. So did Steve Kerr. Yeah. No, they suck. Not good coaches in basketball. I mean, it is what it is. So I think it's a little early for that, but certainly Pruitt goes into this Arkansas game. I thought they would not compete with Georgia and Alabama. I didn't think they'd get housed by Kentucky. And if they lose to Arkansas, yeah, then not so good. All right, let's get to Michigan. Minnesota, Saturday night, big game. Easily the biggest game getting played at that moment. Huge moment in the sun for Minnesota, although rarely sunny up there now.
30 and freezing for the game.
30 and freezing, yet I was very impressed with PJ Fleck with just the ball dome.
Yeah.
You see that?
Yeah.
Harbaugh was wrapped up like a mummy. Also, Harbaugh did not wear khakis.
Yeah, I heard that. Now, you know, I didn't actually even notice, but then I saw that float across Twitter. What the heck?
He apparently has a second pair of pants, and he wore them. They were dark, and he didn't wear cleats. He wore shoes. So he may switch. It was a total different look for Harbaugh. Do you remember the great moment when he was coaching San Francisco? I don't know if college fans even know this because if they didn't pay attention to it. His wife threw out his khakis and was trying to upgrade his wardrobe. And then he went to the combine in Indianapolis and a fan saw him at the local Walmart or something. And he had like five pairs of khakis he was buying. He had snuck away from his wife
each.
Gone to Walmart and bought khakis to try to counteract his wife's wardrobe change. One of the all-time greatest pictures. Look it up. The look on his face, too. Did you look it up?
The NFL coach shops at Walmart for pants. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
It was the great. And the look on his face is like, he's like dumbfounded. Someone's taking, he's got that look. Anyway, he didn't wear them. Huge win, I think, for Michigan. 49-24. We were literally replacing Jim Harbaugh with PJ Fleck last week, as were many in the state of Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
Joe
yeah,
Milton. We this is the question. Could Harbaugh, this is what we were waiting for. Joe Milton was a big time recruit out of Pahokee, Florida. Could have gone to Georgia, could have gone to Florida. Michigan got it. They've developed them. 15-22 last night, 225, one TD, 8 rushes for 52 and another. He looks smooth. He can really huck it. A little rough around the edges, but man, when he gets running, he's big kid. He looked got that little bit of that Cam Newton, not as big as Cam, but where you just see cornerbacks kind of hesitating to hit him because it's going to hurt. A big, big statement for Michigan. Now, this is kind of all about Ohio State at the end, but
yeah, looked good. Very good. And actually, I think Pete might have broken the news that Minnesota had just some major personnel issues. Specialists, they were down kickers, they were down offensive linemen. And so I think that contributed to it. And Minnesota's rebuilding its defense, which might also contribute to it. But Michigan looked like a team that's very that Jim Harbaugh would be really comfortable with. You know, I think that there was an attempt made to a degree to try to fit Shea Patterson and be something that Michigan wasn't necessarily, and we're going to be a little more up-tempo, we're going to chuck it around a little bit more. They ran 56 plays against Minnesota, which is not many. They played at a very deliberate pace. They ran it 31 times. They threw it 25. That's a Harbaugh sort of balance, and you've got a quarterback who can do both, who can throw it, who can run it. Didn't make any major mistakes at all. So I like the way this team kind of fits around the way Harbaugh likes to coach. They've got some playmakers on defense. I think Michigan has a chance. Now, all of that said, I've said 450 times that Michigan has a chance. So I'm going to wait and actually see if it happens first. But that was a good start.
Yeah, I think if you're a Michigan fan, there's all of a sudden optimism, vision, and a path. Right. Like with Shea Patterson last year, there was no path. They're like, oh, we can win the Big Ten East. And this is how with Milton. And again, it's very early. Minnesota lost all but 4 starters on defense, including Antoine Winfield, who may be the best rookie in the NFL on the defensive side of the football. I think he was rookie of the month in September. They clearly and look, there were like huge busts there. And again, all credit to Michigan. Michigan was clearly the better team. They exploited like Minnesota specialists were out. They ran that disastrous fake punt. That was one of the, you know, that was obviously one of the big plays of the half. But pound for pound, there was no question that Michigan was the better team and Michigan was the better program. And look, entering the game, that was a question, right? Minnesota was the one who went 11-2, trounced Auburn in the Outback Bowl. Michigan, again, you know, turtled in all the games where they've come to expect. So I was excited watching Michigan last night because maybe the script is a little different. Maybe Ohio State has a bit of a foil here. Certainly, I think right now that Michigan-Penn State game is super intriguing, right? Like, because you have Penn State down a little bit. Can Michigan sort of reestablish itself as that second team in the East? We should say about Penn State, we talked about them earlier, no Micah Parsons, no Journey Brown. You take the best two players out of any program, that's really hard. Like, Alabama lost the best player from their program last year. Didn't make the playoff. Alabama's losing the best player from their program this year. We'll see how it affects them. Penn State, you lose those two. That's difficult. But props to Harbaugh. Props to Josh Gattis. We were critical of Josh Gattis last year. They looked like a refined, you know, well-oiled offensive machine there, and they didn't ask Milton to do too much.
That team's got some potential. Didn't think it was a perfect game by any. Also, the defense, you know, they made plays. You had the fumble created, all of that scoop and score, kind of. I guess it was a float and score. I don't know what you do it, but really, really good game by Michigan. And I just think that's kind of the team we've been waiting for that we haven't got. And I think Shea Patterson just wasn't good enough. He was a little too small. He just didn't. I mean, he was a guy who kind of looked good at times, but just clearly wasn't. This is an upgrade. And if Milton can, as gets experience, I think be a little more accurate, which is always a big concern. It's hard to get more accurate, but yeah, I mean, he can gun a ball and we'll do it. All right. The quarterback news, though, of the Big Ten this weekend, Wisconsin's Graham Mertz. He was a four-star recruit out of Kansas City. He was a huge get for Wisconsin, which doesn't normally have great quarterbacks. I know they had Russell Wilson, but I think that was one season on a grad transfer bounce. They don't normally get this guy. Mertz, how you like this start? 20 of 21 for 248 yards and 5 TDs. Yeah, that'll do it. That's pretty good quarterback play. 45-7. They crush Illinois on Friday night. Obviously, it's Illinois they didn't even look like they were ready to
obviously,
play.
That was the lock of the week. What do you mean that's obvious?
Yeah, not a great pick. Not a great pick, man.
Oh, that's right. Pat liked Illinois. That's right.
I did.
He has shaved his Lovie Smith beard, I see on our Zoom here.
Sleeper of the Big Forget Ten, that. I think it was. Yeah.
Yes.
I don't think they're going to win the Big Ten, but yeah.
Please, come on.
No, they're not going to win the Big Ten, Pat. No, they are not. How dangerous.
Libel, slander.
Illinois getting plus 8,000 to win the league.
Mm. You know what? Sleeper, baby. I mean, I'm not saying to win the league, but I think they're a dangerous team. I think they will be a dangerous team for Wisconsin Friday night. They were all over the board.
You didn't say they were going to. You said they're not, but you brought it up like it was even a possibility.
Oh, please.
He thought they could win the game. He didn't say they were going to win the Big Ten.
He said they're not. They're not going to win it, but I think they're going to be really good. Anyway.
I didn't say really good.
How good can Wisconsin be, not just this year, but going forward, if you add a big-time quarterback to what is always a really good run game? This is not just a one-day thing for me. This team could be Wisconsin's a nice, cute little team, right? 10-2, Wisconsin. That's what they are. Well, maybe more. Could the sweatshirt get it done in Madison, Pete?
They have had such a distinct identity, right? Like when you flip on Wisconsin, you know exactly what you're going to see, almost to the point of parody, right? You're going to have the big, beefy lineman from, I'm not even going to make up a Wisconsin town because I got a lot of heat for mispronouncing Wisconsin town names. So
sure did.
I'm afraid to pronounce Milwaukee at this point without a torrent of tweet and hate mail. So Chris was the OC in 11 when they had Wilson. They won 11 games. They lost the Rose Bowl and things certainly changed. And look, if you want like the profile of a program on the cusp of being elite, you go, this is in the last 10 years. Rose Bowl, Pinstripe Bowl, Orange Bowl, Cotton Bowl, Holiday Bowl, Outback Bowl, Capitol, Rose, 3 in a row. So, and that was Bielma. But the one thing other than the Russell Wilson anomaly that they have not had during that is what I think you need now to compete in modern college football. You need a quarterback who can stretch the field. You need a dynamic playmaker. And in watching Wisconsin the other night, I was not blown away by their tailbacks. Like, I don't think this stable of tailbacks could be the worst they have had in 20 years. And their offensive line looked good. I haven't checked in with any NFL people on it yet since week one. But, like, they don't have, to my knowledge, that, like, first-round left tackle. Now, I'm sure they're very good players, and they can really develop that position. But Barry Alvarez, when I talked to him Saturday, was very open to being like, hey, maybe we're past first now. Which is, like, kind of crazy if you really think about it now. You know what I mean? It would be like, half of Wisconsin being like, hey, maybe we'll go vegan, right? We got a lot of cheese around. Let's give it a shot.
I don't think you can eat cheese when you're vegan.
No, you cannot.
You can't eat cheese if you're vegan?
No, cheese is dairy.
Good God.
You got to know your vegan rules, man. Come on.
Sorry. You're the guy who should know this.
Yeah, you're the healthy eater.
Yeah, but I eat mostly meat, so I'm like the wrong guy.
You could be vegetarian.
I'm the wrong animal sympathist for this podcast.
No. You could be vegetarian and eat cheese pizza and stuff, but no.
Yeah.
Not be. Anyway.
Pete, like Wisconsin has always been like your Honda Accord. And I've very good car, dependable, gets you from home to work and back, change the oil, rotate the tires. It's going to run for 150,000 miles, but there's just not going to be a lot of thrill driving it. Now you had a quarterback like Graham Mertz. You might have yourself a nice little BMW coupe, you know, a little something with some zip, a little excitement in there. I agree that the running backs right now just look like guys, and they're going to actually have running back by committee, which they usually don't do. They usually have a centerpiece guy who's really good, but that doesn't look like this team. The question, do they have good enough receivers? They got Jake Ferguson, who's Barry Alvarez's grandson, who's a really good tight end. Danny Davis made some plays for him the other night, but I want to see if they can really worry defensive coordinators with their receivers, per se. But their quarterback can, I think. So this is a big step forward, and I am intrigued now to see where Wisconsin can go with this.
All right, other brief news in the Big Ten. We got to Rutgers' big moment. Michigan State and Maryland are horrible, looked horrible. Ohio State pummels Nebraska 52-17. Ryan Day apologizes for the late touchdown. I don't like that. Should have taken a knee. Whatever.
It's funny. That was the bigger headline than the game yesterday.
I know. That was on ESPN's crawl. I'm like, why?
Yeah, it really wasn't a big deal. No. Justin Fields, 20 for 21, 276, two touchdowns, 15 rushes, another touchdown. Slightly more important than someone's feelings possibly getting hurt because you lost 52-17, not 45-17. Nebraska put up a fight, but they're still just not anywhere near where they need to be. We will see how good. Ohio State looked very good, so we'll see what Nebraska does from here on out. I want to get to Big 12. Oklahoma State 24, Iowa State 21 in a backdoor cover that hurt.
No.
Painful backdoor cover.
Brutal.
Oklahoma State had this game. One.
Matt Campbell lined it up. It was perfect. He didn't go for that field goal to give him a chance to win. Nope. He went right for the backdoor cover.
You kick the field goal first, and then you do the onside kick, Matt Campbell.
Oklahoma State missed like a 30-something yard field goal in the first possession, and right then and there I said, we're screwed.
Pat, you and I were brothers in this one, and it was painful. Yep. They dominated. What are you doing, Matt Campbell? You're supposed to play to win the game, not cover.
Exactly.
It's a bunch of
unlike Brian Kelly, who praised last week for playing to cover.
Yes, he played the cover. And then I don't bet on Notre Dame this week. And look at how they house Pittsburgh. Jeez, can't catch a break over here. 3-3 in the race for the case for me. Anyway, Oklahoma State wins. They are now in control of the Big 12. Next 3 weeks, Texas at home, Kansas State, who destroyed Kansas, as I predicted. And then at OU, who they've beaten, they're beaten just four times the last 20. So they have a huge run here to go, and we'll see where we can do it. Here's my question about Oklahoma State, because we'll talk a lot about them, obviously, the next 3 weeks. The narrative is Oklahoma State finishes the Big 12 undefeated. They deserve a spot in the playoff. My question is, Coastal Carolina's undefeated, and they're in the Sun Belt. If they finish undefeated, why doesn't Coastal Carolina get the playoff spot above Oklahoma State?
Okay.
If we have little data to compare, and it's not about the jersey.
I'm here to tell you, that's a heck of a provocative point. I like that point.
That's why I make the big bucks on this podcast. I mean, why is such Coastal Carolina out? We have so little data. These leagues are only playing each other, themselves, except that one. The Big 12 played a bunch of games against the Sun Belt, and the Sun Belt beat them most of those games. So what is it? Why is Oklahoma State 6th and Coastal's 25th? I don't care what these sports writers and coaches come up with. The data is going to be there. Now, we'll see if Coastal goes all the way, but God, I love that team. But
yeah.
Why are we talking Big 12, not Fun Belt?
I got to give you credit, man. I fell into the trap of, they're big. Oklahoma State looks pretty good. They're undefeated. And I ranked them in our top 10, and I did not rank Coastal Carolina. There's a hole in my logic there that you have exposed. But that Coastal Carolina, without their quarterback, who's been very good, wins by two touchdowns against Georgia Southern. That's good. That's a good win. I mean, what they're doing down there is it's crazy. It's fun. It's completely off the radar, out of nowhere. But give them some respect.
Well, I thought I couldn't love Coastal Carolina more after last week when we revealed that they had seven or eight players with mullets, including their middle linebacker who dyed his blonde. Like, if you can't get, you're like, all right, you can't get more lovable than that. No, they brought in a wrestler to do like a was it a pregame or a postgame hype thing, Sully? Do you know?
I think it was postgame.
It was after the game, and they did this like elaborate wrestling skit where they had some poor guy dressed in like a costume of the Georgia Southern mascot, and it involved like a table break, like straight out of a Buffalo Bills tailgate, and it was like there was a heel, and like that poor kid must have left bruised. By the way, there was some serious contact when you watched that video. But to me, the Coastal Carolina postgame like. Like the Tom Allen video was great yesterday. Like you see the raw emotion, you see the kids. That's awesome, right? But the Coastal Carolina thing was the most fun thing, the most fun 1 minute video a college program has produced this year. You could not watch that and just be filled with sheer joy. Like, look at that. Look at this guy. So give Jamie Chadwell a ton of credit. Without Grayson McCall at quarterback, they beat a feisty little Georgia Southern team. And I know we're supposed to talk about Oklahoma State. I'm going to wait to get excited about Oklahoma State and really consider them a playoff contender. I'm going to let them play Texas, and then I'm going to let them play at Kansas State. They have not really had a road test. That the Big 12 to me historically is one of those huge like home road swings. Nobody wins at West Virginia. People struggle in Lubbock all the time. The only place Oklahoma State has gone so far is Kansas, which doesn't count. So they got Texas at home. Who knows what Texas team shows up? The only thing with Texas, you know, is the game will be close. There will be special teams blunders and the game will be close.
And then, a lot of penalties.
Yes, a lot of penalties. And then you go at K-State, which is right now the best coach team in the Big 12. And, you know, they've overcome all this COVID adversity. They're supremely well coached. So on November 7th, I'll be ready to have like a serious conversation about Oklahoma State in the playoff. And the one thing, if they do become a playoff contender this year, that I was thinking about this yesterday, that I don't want to hear is they've overcome all this adversity. Like, and that narrative needs to die. It cannot happen. It cannot emerge. It cannot leave any TV broadcaster's mouth. It cannot be part of what happened.
And yet it will leave some broadcaster's mouth.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
They went through so much.
Yeah, he finally did his job. I watched their behind the scenes, all access Oklahoma State football show. And during the whole thing, he's like, I listened to Hubbard for like 2 hours. We had a conversation for like 2 hours. Then he went and baled hay with his dad. Like, it wasn't like it was like weeks of like thinking and I'm going to spend my time. Like, he's like, I had a 2 hour conversation. Like, all right, that's fine. I'm not criticizing him. But let's not overblow how much this really weighed on Mike Gundy.
Yeah.
Right. First off, look at yesterday, Oklahoma State by 3 beat Iowa State. Iowa State lost by 17 points to Louisiana. Coastal beat Louisiana. Like, yeah. How good is Iowa State? Like, I just think the Big 12 has no data point that makes you say it's a great conference.
Yep.
So right. The Sun Belt should be ranked higher than them. It's all names. And if we're going to get down to this, if it's supposed to be statistical, you should get 1 point for the wrestling thing, extra point in the playoff standings. And also, how quickly did some SEC coaches, like Saban's looking at that, but we need to hire a theater major. We got to get our post-game acting has to be better. Like, this is going to go on. This is going to be like that third quarter LED shows, right? This year's LED shows are going to be stage celebrations after the game in the locker room to attract recruits. Coastal Carolina right there. All right, let's talk about easily. And we've talked about some bad losses in this. The worst loss possibly I've ever seen. Rice.
Catastrophically bad.
Rice and Middle Tennessee tied. First game of the year for Rice. They couldn't get anything going. They finally get it up. They take a knee 3 straight times to set up a Colin Richestelli's 45-yard field goal for the win. Hit it and you win at the buzzer. He kicks it. It hits the right upright. If you haven't seen this, I'm sure y'all have. Go look it up. Hits the crossbar. Hits the left upright. Hits the crossbar again and bounces out. 4 doinks. The 4 doinker.
Unprecedented.
I've never seen it in my life. I've never seen a 3. Never seen it at any time in any game. I actually was at a junior high football game yesterday where the two teams scored 4 times and converted 0 of the extra points. Wasn't even close.
That's junior high football.
I don't know why they're even attempting this. I'm like, you go get an 8th grade girl from the soccer team and have her kick it. Because you guys, this is terrible. And even they couldn't doink it 4 times.
Like, Dan Rippon Jr. High Football is like when Pat ripped his daughter's swim performance on the podcast.
I'm ripping. Yeah, I'm ripping the eighth grade
sometimes
kickers.
Sometimes they need to be ripped. Come on.
The eighth grade kickers of Metro Detroit suck. I'm going to tell you right now, from what I saw, one game. Anyway, never seen this before. Middle Tennessee, of course, goes on to win in overtime. I believe the quote after by Mike Bloomgreen, did it hit four times? I think it hit four times. Four times, coach. Yeah,
I mean, I've never seen anything like it. I hope for the kicker's sake it never happens again. But I mean, I just the pain involved in that thing. We were watching that, and you got to think, oh, if it hits the first time, it's going to bounce in. But no, I mean, like an oblong object really just can't do that to go four times on a plane, basically. And it did. It was unbelievable. And yeah, poor Rice. This is what happened. Okay. I mean, the overtime of this game, what a festival of disaster. Middle Tennessee gets the first possession, goes backwards, misses a 50-yard field goal short. So all Rice has to do is make that field goal to win. And Rice basically turtles at that point. They try one run for 1 yard, and then they have the quarterback take two losses, 1 yard, 2 yards. Those 1 or 2 yards made a difference, because then you have the Richitelli kick that goes doink, 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 and out. And so we move on then, and Rice gets possession first in the next overtime. Field goal blocked, and then Middle Tennessee wins. And yeah, poor Rice, there were a lot of rumors in August they weren't even going to play. They finally get their season off the ground. You know, they're one of the last teams to start playing 6 weeks after the rest of their conference, basically. And the first game ends like that. Brutal.
I feel confident saying that in the history of football, 150 years of football, there have been tens of millions of kicks, right? You think college, NFL, high school, junior high, all across America and the world, tens of millions of kicks. Is that a fair estimate?
Probably. Sure.
And I will say that there has never in the history of football been a four-doink kick. Now, somewhere along the line in a high school game in South Dakota, this could have happened, but I would be stunned. Like, I feel good standing on a table saying we have never seen that and we will not see that again. Try to replicate. Like, we're talking about one in a trillion, a four-doink kick. Like, you could try to to me, the first thing I thought of was like a 7-10 split in bowling.
Right, but that can be done.
But those happen.
Yeah, yes. Those regularly happen. It's very, very hard. But yeah.
Yes. Yeah. With two extra steps put in the middle of it. Like, it is. I watched it like 30. There was like a million things going on at that point. It was like Indiana, Penn State. And I couldn't stop watching it. It was just like, it was unbelievable.
It's a 7-10 split with the pins on different lanes.
Yes. That's a good way to put it.
Don't know how that could have happened.
Thank you for completing the analogy. Yes, it's much appreciated. So imagine last night. You want like depths of we like to explore depths of misery. Imagine being Drew Svoboda. He is the special teams coach at Rice. Every day, 365 days a year, Drew Svoboda wakes up thinking, working at special teams at Rice. And you lose because of that and then a blocked kick. Can you imagine what his Saturday night was like? Like, that just has to be like, you want to talk about the ultimate lows? That has to be the ultimate of lows.
All right, we like to hand out the Heisman every single week because we're impatient. So let's do our small sample Heisman.
Hello, record book.
Hello, small sample Heisman.
How about that?
I'm going to give it to Desmond Ridder, the junior quarterback for Cincinnati. He had 8 carries for a 179, 3 TDs, including a 91-yarder that really iced the game for Cincinnati. An authoritative 42-13 win. Give Luke Fickell and Desmond Ridder credit. They knew they needed to win this game in this manner. Like, they, if they went to SMU and they won, you know, 17-16, it wasn't going to look good. You, if you're Cincinnati and you want to bull your way into that playoff conversation, you need to win like this. And this was their marquee game of the season. I don't think they'll be playing anyone ranked in the same echelon as they were. I mean, shoot, Memphis isn't even ranked right now. If you look at the rest of their schedule, UCF also is 3-2 and unranked. So this was it for Cincinnati. The AAC has failed them in some ways. Maybe Tulsa ends up being ranked when they play them at the end of the year. I think Tulsa is actually a pretty good team. So, but give Desmond Ridder credit. They went into Dallas and completely pummeled SMU, and that's why he gets my small sample Heisman.
All right, I'm going to go on the defensive side of the ball. Missouri linebacker / jack of all trades, Nick Bolton. Really good player, junior there. He's been good since he arrived, and Missouri turned in a heck of a defensive performance to finally beat Kentucky, a team that has had Missouri's number. They've beaten them 5 times in a row. Bolton had 7 unassisted tackles in the game. He's averaging almost 11 tackles per game for the season. He's a playmaker, disruptor, and Missouri showed some defense. It's interesting. They won a shootout against LSU. Then they turn around and win a grinder against Kentucky. And Missouri's showing some signs of life under Eli Drinkwitz. Good start here to the season after being pummeled pretty hard their first 2 games. Good rebound, I guess I should say, for Missouri. So Nick Bolton, small sample Heisman.
I'll give the small sample Heisman to Hank Bachmeier, Boise State quarterback. 20 of 28, 268 yards, 3 touchdowns as Boise State won 42-13. Over Utah State. Good to have the blue back. Always an addition to our college football experience. Bachmeier was really good last year. Looked even better this year. Going to be a really interesting season for Boise State football. And I like seeing the Mountain West get going. But Bachmeier looked great, so I'll give him my small sample Heisman. All right, we said a lot of mean things in this podcast. I think we fired a few people possibly, or we trashed them, or whatever we did. Can we say something nice? This is the challenge of this segment. Pat Forty, can you say something nice?
I can. I absolutely can. I want to say something nice about Purdue, which was down Rondale Moore, their outstanding playmaking receiver / return / running guy, who opted back in, but then couldn't play in the opener. More importantly, they were down their head coach and play caller, Jeff Brohm. So he turns over that to younger brother Brian Brohm. They're playing Iowa. I figure they are in for a long day without those two guys, and they beat Iowa. Yet another really interesting result in the Big Ten. David Bell, receiver there, sophomore, he was really good last year, but what a start to this year. 13 catches, 121 yards, 3 touchdowns, and they make their quarterback situation work. Aiden O'Connell, they've been kind of all over the map looking for a quarterback the last couple of years. He plays well for them. Purdue, I'm say something nice about you. That's a heck of a way to start the season.
Pete, say something nice.
I'm going to say something nice about our friends at San Jose State. First of all, I want to thank San Jose State for being on at like 1:15 in the morning when I was finishing my column. There's something comforting to having that those last 2 hours of the day on the East Coast filled with football. San Jose State had to go like 300 miles from their campus to Humboldt State to have practice. You know, few programs went through more in order to play. So it was great to see San Jose State play well against Air Force, win 17-6. Air Force won 11 games last year, was 1-0 after beating Navy pretty handily. So that for the San Jose State program, sort of perpetually bedraggled program, for Brent Brennan and quarterback Nick Starkle, the off-transferred Nick Starkle, who went 22 of 29, 226 yards, 2 touchdowns. You think about all the players, all the coaches, everything they have to pour in to go out there and get a huge win like that. Props to San Jose. And selfishly, I love that we have Mountain West, Pac-12 in 2 weeks, right? The college football experience is feeling more and more whole.
All right, I'm going to say something nice. I might say 2 things nice because we didn't get to one or either of them. First off, Jaylen Waddle, I'm going to say something nice about you.
There you go.
This sucks. Injured ankle, gone for the season. Alabama's absolutely electric wide receiver. He was easily going to be one of the most exciting players to watch all season in college football. And he is out. I would guess that he ends up going to the NFL after the season. We may never see him again in college. And he will do a lot of very exciting things on Sundays, but would have been fun to watch him play this year on Saturday. Tremendous, tremendous player. And a big loss for Alabama. We'll see. You lose a player like that. I know they are stacked with talent, but that is the kind of game breaker who wins you those tight games. And Jalen Waddle was great. So we're thinking of you, Jalen, on the same thing. I'm going to stay in the SEC and say something nice about Lane Kiffin. Refuses to change. They lost to Auburn, one touchdown game to Auburn yesterday. There was a play that seemed to be a kickoff. Or was it bumped by an Auburn player? Was it a fumble? Was it not? Auburn gets it. Auburn got a great call the week before against Arkansas, their luckiest team in America. Double Waffle House orders for Gus Malzahn this week. Anyway, a man named Breck Jones, who describes himself as an Ole Miss alum who also likes the Giants, Yankees, and Knicks. Don't see that every day. He puts out a tweet. This is sort of random Ole Miss fan. Y'all all are a disgrace at SEC. Your officiating is absolutely atrocious at SEC officiating. If y'all want to just keep gifting Auburn wins, just say it. You know, good on you, Breck. Get it out.
Yep.
Get the anger out. Okay, we want that. Vent. But who retweets this random quote? Random tweet out there. Lane Kiffin retweets that y'all are a disgrace at SEC. Your officiating is absolutely atrocious. And I don't know what will come of this, but I am going to say something nice about Lane Kiffin. Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Keep it up.
He's right. That call sucks. That was terrible.
It did. And it's the second straight week for Auburn. So what is the SEC now biased in favor of Auburn?
Well, that's the thing. See, that's where the conspiracy theory runs into a little bit of trouble because, if you ask around the SEC has always been biased towards Alabama. So now can you really turn around and be biased towards the arch rival of Alabama?
I got to hear the back theory on this.
There's a lot of Auburn grads in Birmingham, y'all. I'm just saying.
Here we go. Yep. The SEC is always biased in favor of whoever my team is playing. That's the SEC mantra.
Yeah. Remember that Carville letter? That was one of the best.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, Lane Kiffin, Breck Jones, you are the James Carville of Ole Miss. Congratulations. So great weekend. We didn't even get to it all. We'll be back more midweek. Halloween. We're playing on Halloween. Nothing crazy could happen that. Full moon Halloween. We'll hype it all up on Wednesday. Talk to you all then. Please subscribe. Please keep listening. Tell your friends. Share us on social media. Every little bit helps. We need to keep growing this podcast. Thank you very much. Talk to you then.